You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Denver Sports Podcast, brought to you by Breckenridge Brewery. We are running the gang back again. We did it last week. We all talked about how much fun we have when we do shows together. So we're like, you know what? We'll just run it back. And
well, you guys talk about it.
I mentioned it to you.
Andre and I said we'll run it back, and I was like, cool. AJ's in. I'm deciding for him. And before the show even got started, all the reasons why we like doing this are already rearing their head. I'm not going to get into it, but
wise choice.
We're already having fun. Did you guys see the? I think it was Rappaport was on the field last week at like training camp at a training camp, and he was talking to the guy off his like co-host off air. And they like get the live feed thrown to him. And whoever it was, I don't remember exactly what it was. Whoever it was he was talking to, he was like, well, yeah, you know, Rappaport over here thinks that he could da-da-da-da-da. Yeah, that wasn't really for air, but yes, I guess I did say that. Like, you tell him it was something where it was like, yo, dude, I was telling you that behind the scenes.
Like, come on, man.
Read the room. So I'm not going to do that to you. But...
that would be the end of my career.
We're just here. You know, we're having fun. It's a Wednesday. It's, I guess, hump day. I guess we don't really get hump day in our industry, but for everyone else, that's what it is. Last week, we were on the negative side, trying to look at how everyone could be better. And this week, we're back to just celebrating. The entire point of sports is to score more points than the other team, but not enough guys get enough credit for keeping the other team from scoring points. And that's what we're going to talk about today. There have been some fantastic defenders that have rolled through the city of Denver, state of Colorado, at the pro and collegiate level. And we're going to get into those today. We're going to talk a little bit about who are the best defenders that have ever come through, see if we can decide on maybe who the best defender is, ever was. And then there's a lot of people who maybe don't make their way into that top five, top three, but there have been a lot of really fun players to watch on the defensive side of the ball slash puck. For some local teams more than others, but we're going to get into all of that. But before we get going, do either of you have anything just kind of fun to kick this off, or should we just dive right into it?
I think the fun can be had diving right in. I think the most controversial for best defender of each teams fall right in our wheelhouse.
Yeah.
Because Rockies, Nuggets seems a little more clear cut. Avs, I, I might hold your guys' feet to the fire. There might be some recency bias on this one. The only thing I would add is we're presented by Breckenridge Brewery. Check out that Avalanche Ale. Yes. Good stuff.
I didn't give Breckenridge Brewery enough love. You're 100% right. I mentioned them. Use that Breck Beer Locator, like Andre said, or like Andre said. Find that Avalanche Ale. Get on down to the bar, the DNVR Bar 2.0, when we get it back rocking and rolling here in just a matter of weeks. You know we'll have all their beers on tap. We'll have their hard seltzies at the bar. It's summer. Like, go get the lemonade seltzers. That's pretty much all I drink when it's hot out. I don't like the regular seltzers. I need a little bit more, just not Breckenridge Brewery, just in general. And I love that Breck offers the lemonade because the seltzers are great. I just need a little bit more sweetness, and Breck comes through with the lemonade seltzies. So use that Breck Beer Locator. Find out. It seems like they've got them everywhere now. I walk into my King Supers and Safeway and all that stuff, and they're there. So just use that locator. Find them anywhere.
You know where they will have all the Breckenridge beer seltzies your heart could desire this Saturday, Broncos tailgate, first one of the year. Be there. Unlimited. All you can drink. And y'all have tried, but you have never tapped us out of all the drinks we had. So we'll see. Maybe this is the year where you get it all done. But
was that a preseason challenge
to you, DNVR community? So we'll see.
It's gonna say, if you're trying to make the preseason matter, that's a good way. Set the tone for the entire season by having a preseason game be the one that you drink the house dry.
Yeah, can you tap us out of Breckenridge drinks? We'll find out. I don't believe you can. So
yeah, haven't done it yet. So got a prove you can do it. Speaking of people that have to prove they can do it, that is where we're going to start at the top of this list. How much? I guess let me ask you a question before we get into the official names. In relativity to that, how much does a championship weigh into where these guys ultimately will fall as we go through this conversation? Does it matter? Are we talking about individuals here? So it's not really a matter of what did the teams accomplish? How do you guys feel on this? Do you need a ship to work your way into the top of these types of conversations?
I think performance in the postseason, as it does when we talk about things like Hall of Fame and Mount Rushmore, stuff like that. But I think postseason performance, all it does is enhance their resume.
Yeah.
You know, some of the guys that we're going to talk about were unbelievable players, and they just weren't on very good teams, so they never got the same chance,
right,
to perform on the big stage as some of these other guys. Some of these other guys got a chance to perform on the big stage because they were that good at what they did. Mm-hmm. So, as always, a little push and pull, but the postseason performance, look, if there's an exceptional one, it elevates it. If there's a disastrous one, it really hurts the case because, oh yeah, it's great, but a regular season performer is like the worst thing that a pro athlete's legacy can be.
Yeah,
fair point. It's a fair point. It's kind of the ultimate tiebreaker, but I don't think it's what frames the whole conversation. Also, you guys are kind of lucky because I think everyone you would have considered for the Avs does have that ship at least one. So
yeah.
Easy enough, right? More comes into play for the Broncos guys, and I'm not going to spoil anything. So,
let's start with the Broncos because I agree with you, Dre, that on when you're talking about the Avs, you know, you can get into some recency bias. But I want to start with two guys that when we first started throwing out this list in our kind of group chat, you guys both immediately jumped and said, these two guys have to be on it. No questions asked. And I kind of want to hear where you guys fall when you're talking about them head to head. Von Miller, Champ Bailey. These are two guys that you're not dealing with recency bias. You've had some time to digest their time here in Colorado. Dre, we'll start with you. When you step back and look at these two, I mean, are these the two best, greatest defenders in Denver Bronco history? Yeah,
for sure. there's a lot of guys who we can bring up in the honorable mention section, so I'm not going to spoil that. But these two stand out above the rest. You know, one's a Super Bowl MVP, Von Miller, obviously. Also, highest drafted Bronco, you know, natural drafted. Obviously, yeah. Elway and Peyton were. So he kind of has that unique distinction. And Champ Bailey's a first ballot Hall of Famer on top of being one of the all-decade players and really a symbol of that era of Broncos football. And I think you kind of knew this coming, framing it with the playoff stuff, is Vaughn's best case is going to be that outside of Terrell Davis, you could say maybe, I mean, certainly one of the greatest playoff performers in Broncos history. Even though it's a fairly limited sample size, which, like, that's the playoffs for you.
Right.
While Champ has that longevity, that consistency, he has that insane stretch of his in 05 and 06, where he has 18 interceptions in 30 games for a guy that the ball was never thrown to. Their first team all pros are very similar. Champ has the edge 3-2. Their Pro Bowl appearances, Champ, this is where his consistency, longevity stands out. He has 11 to his name. That's almost gonna lap Vaughn, who has 7, if I'm not mistaken. And then, you know, Vaughn has the lost season, but a lot more team success. While Champ, I just think Vaughn in Broncos history is certainly way up there. Mm-hmm. But when you talk greatest cornerbacks of all time versus greatest edge rushers, outside linebackers, pass rushers in NFL history, I think Vaughn is just a little lower on the list. Now, Vaughn still has more to go, right? He just capped off a championship season with the Rams and a stellar playoff performance in that run as well. But I'm not totally going to count that because we're more talking within the context of Denver sports. So, man, it's a true Sophie's choice. To me, just on instinct, I go Champ. To me, he was the more consistently great. He's the one who would earn more, like, all-decade accolades, would be higher on all-time lists as far as you know, their positions are concerned. So it's like by the slightest edge, I would go Champ, and I actually think Champ, more than just about anyone we have talked about, you know, off air before coming on to this, you could make a case deserves to sit number one on this list.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure I could make a strong case for Vaughn as far as that goes.
I like that. I like that last part there, because I think that's where your edge is, right? AJ?
I mean, Champ Bailey is the guy that gave us 2/3 of the earth is covered by water and the other third is covered by Champ Bailey. Vaughn didn't give us that shit. Vaughn gave us, you know, the eat and greedy sack dance and off season videos with chickens.
So
and a Super Bowl.
Super Bowl run. Yeah.
The Super Bowl was good too. He was unbelievable in that run. Yeah. And to do it against the guys that he did it against, you know, the you go Roethlisberger, Brady, and MVP Cam Newton. I mean, come on, man. Mm-hmm. That's the best of the best there.
Yeah.
He really was special in that run, but Champ Bailey, Champ Bailey had one of the all-time great seasons for his position ever.
Mm-hmm.
And then produced an iconic moment as one of the first guys to really beat Brady, to really put the
Playoff loss for Brady Belichick. Yeah.
Yeah. To really put the first dent in the armor of the Brady Belichick, you know, Super Bowl bonanza that those two bathed in. And Champ, like, he was the kind of the guy, he put the exclamation point on that game, even if he did totally fumble that out the end zone.
Yeah. So, you know, you guys both talked about, and I do love that this goes immediately into what we were talking about with the championships, and because I feel like, yeah, you remember especially the Super Bowl against Carolina. Try not to remember the one before that. And how special Von Miller was in that game, let alone on that whole ride.
Well, it also goes to show you his importance that Von didn't even play in the other Super Bowl.
Right.
Yeah. Hurt.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a great point. But, you know, it is interesting because, you know, the other thing that I honestly remember of Von is the little bit of the fall off thereafter. Now, some of that was injuries. There, you know, there was a lot of things that went into that, but he wasn't at that same level. I don't, and you know, I'm digging my brain. I'm sure there's games or two here and there, but like, you didn't get that from Champ Bailey.
No.
There just wasn't the big drop off in the level of play. It was just so much more. You use the word, Drake, consistent. And is that maybe what qualifies him as, like you said, giving him the edge over Vaughn, where, yeah, they were both great. Vaughn maybe had a higher peak, but holy smokes, did Champ Bailey do it for so long. And then I do think your distinction there of, you know, where Champ Bailey ranks in terms of cornerbacks relative to where Von Miller ranks in terms of, kind of like you said, pick a category, right, edge rusher, whatever. And AJ, I remember you talked about this with Patrick Waugh a few weeks ago when you guys were doing the numbers one. When you're talking about someone that's possibly the greatest to ever do it at their position, man, is it hard to say that someone who isn't that is better player, better legacy, whatever. Yeah. So,
equally dominant defenses too, like probably Super Bowl 50, 2015, a little, I mean, obviously more dominant, but the 05 defense, very dominant and carries that team to a home AFC championship game that they lose to Big Ben, which has now been brought up twice.
Sorry, everyone.
Man, it's a tough call. I think Vaughn has the distinction as greatest first rounder in Broncos history. Again, naturally drafted, but I just think Champ has the cleaner resume. And I'm never a guy. I'm more a peak guy versus longevity. But I think with his peak being similarly as dominant, while the stage might not have been as bright, but similarly as spectacular and dominant, his longevity, like, Vaughn can't really mess with.
Stayed at the peak longer.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. For sure. That's another great point. Yeah.
AJ,
I would also say that Champ Bailey also never had a drug suspension.
Yeah. Wasn't suspended almost an entire season. Didn't lose, like, a massive chunk of his prime. That definitely factors into this, no doubt.
Yeah.
Longevity, right? Like, consistency. Yeah. That's
Champ, part of it. Champ was year in, year out, an elite cornerback up until the end, the very end of his career, where he didn't have it anymore. Mm-hmm. And he woke up one day and just couldn't do it. He went to the Saints and like tried to play safety for part of the season. And it was just done. There was no Charles Woodson second act there.
Yeah. Right. Even though lots of people are thinking, oh, he could do that, like play safety, such ball hawk, such great instincts.
Yeah.
You're right.
He was at that point physically, he just didn't have it anymore. If he was going to make that switch, he needed to do it 2 or 3 years earlier. But he was still such an effective cornerback at that point that there was no real need to. Which guy is a higher impact player, an elite safety or an elite corner?
Yeah.
So You know, Champ was the best of the best, and the one thing that Vaughn did is spearhead a championship run.
Yeah,
like he was the MVP of that run. There's nobody else that you can make a really good argument for in that situation, and Champ didn't have that kind of talent around him. He was on a lot of 8-8 football teams.
But also
that goes to show you like the impact of the position, especially in that era as running backs were still winning MVPs and shit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Sean Alexander into Adrian Peterson, right? Like yeah. You're still talking about running games were still dominant in the NFL in a way that they just aren't now.
Yeah.
And today we look at corners like, oh my gosh, you know, you've got to have a great corner and you've got to have a great pass rusher.
Mm-hmm.
And trying to pick between them, it's real tough.
Yeah.
Because it's like, which Hall of Fame talent do you decide is more important? It's probably Vaughn, I think. I think it's just positionally a little bit more valuable because a quarterback not throwing the ball at all is a lot more valuable than him picking on your second or third cornerback.
Yes.
But what Champ did, I think Champ was better at what he did. What Vaughn did was more valuable.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's maybe this could be a good way to kind of wrap it up. We did decide to omit goalies and pitchers.
Yeah.
So technically speaking, what they do is defensive, but they are not technically speaking defenders, and we just didn't want to go down that road and make this too complicated. I took
goalies would be easier to get into than pitchers because pitchers whoa, you're telling me run prevention isn't defense? Well, it's like ball, like Jesus Christ, like ball in play here, guy.
Right.
You know, and like at least goalies, ball is in, like ball in play. You know, the puck is there. They're the last line of defense, but they also don't leave the crease. They're only defense.
Yeah.
There's no other aspect to their game except that time that Patrick Waugh deked Gretzky at center ice in Madison Square Garden.
Frankie likes to get a little lit sometimes, but
he pulled in Edmonton. He did.
As you know, AJ, I spent a year to a year and a half of my career life coming up with a metric DPR for each position in all the major four sports to kind of establish, like, have a unique 1 to 100 scale. And offensive linemen, cornerbacks, pitchers, and goalies all had similar metrics. It's not so much the production you were able to achieve. It's how many mistakes were you able to limit? How many runs, how many goals, how many receiving yards, how many sacks were you able to allow?
They have the same problem in that they can't produce offense.
Right. It's this.
They are 100% reliant, and especially now in baseball with the DH in both leagues, where we can have a universal conversation here, that they could do their job 100% perfectly and still not win the game.
Right. And
so,
of there all has to those be positions, Champ Bailey is about as perfect in limiting others getting production on him as just about, you know, not just the metric, but me as a sports fan with like 25, 30 years of watching this shit.
Yeah.
I'm not sure I can think of someone who was as immaculate in holding the best of the best at the highest level in his back pocket than Champ Bailey. So that might be the strongest argument I can make. As we said, Vaughn's production more impactful. The production Champ limited, which is way harder to grade, though, is rare.
It's true because so much of Champ's value is in things that did not happen.
Exactly. Yeah. So that would be my case for Champ.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're relatively all on the same page that it's probably Champ edging out Vaughn Miller there. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about a couple that they're a little bit more clear cut in terms of their actual teams. But we mentioned a minute ago when you're talking about a player who potentially or in the conversation for best of all time at their position. You obviously have to give them the floor. Nolan Arenado, and I hate to bring this up on a second straight TDSP with AJ, obviously did not end the way that Rockies fans would have wanted. He's still doing his thing in St. Louis. But during his time with the Colorado Rockies, Nolan Arenado, I mean, I don't know Larry Walker was good, you know, on the defensive side of the ball. I don't think the Rockies have ever had anyone that's in the conversation for greatest to ever do it at this position, other than Nolan.
Tulo had some great moments. There are times where it was like Todd Helton's one of the greatest first basemen of all time.
Mm-hmm.
Different from playing the hot corner about as good as anyone.
Right. Right.
Adrian?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Nolan is. he's going to go into the Hall of Fame, man. He's gonna go into the Hall of Fame, and part of the reason for that is because he's a dominant defender.
Yeah.
And that's also one reason why I absolutely cackled like a maniac when he overran a ball last night at Coors Field. And amidst the Rockies shredding the Cardinals. That's it. That's my joy in life. That moment. the rest of Arenado's career is a dagger in the hearts of all of us who dared to care. So
yeah,
he was that special though in Colorado, in St. Louis. I mean, you start your career with nothing but gold gloves like every year, and that's one of those awards where after a while, when you win a couple of them, it becomes a reputation that everybody's just like, wow, Nolan Arenado. I mean, Nolan Arenado, he's that guy, right? But then you would get to the end of the year and you would look at the metrics and you were like, oh, yep, still that guy.
Yep, he is that guy.
Yep, so, he's still that guy. All right, cool.
I grew up playing hockey 5-6 nights a week, watching hockey every bit I could. So I've been trained from the time I was young, fast pace. I like games that move quick, that there's not a lot of stoppages, not a lot of slow. So I've always struggled to like really get into a baseball game. What to me is so fun, so special about Nolan Arenado is that dude makes playing third base electric. Like, he would make plays. Obviously, I haven't kept up ultra close with what Nolan Arenado is doing for the Cardinals. But, you know, when he was here with the Rockies, he would make plays that pull you out of your seat. And I know a lot of, you know, baseball purists and stuff will probably roll their eyes when I say it, but there aren't a lot of those for, you know, casual fans, non-baseball diehards. It's hard to be pulled out of your seat in a baseball game.
It's hard to be pulled out of your seat by defense, for sure. Right.
Yeah.
Because, everybody gets excited about a home run. Everybody gets excited about a double that clears the bases or something. But you don't get too amped up very often about defense, especially when a guy mishits a ball and it's like this dribbler down the third base line. And you're like, okay. But to your point, Jesse, that Arenado was such a special talent that he turned the dribbler down the third base line into potential for something memorable, because he could just get up there and barehand it and fire that missile across the infield, and you were just like, come on, give me 27 ground balls to Nolan Arenado. That's what I want. I want all 27 outs to be ground balls to Nolan Arenado.
That's a great point, Jesse. He might be the leader on this list with the like best defensive highlight package of anyone we're going to talk about in this.
Oh, episode. I don't know, man. Vaughn. The sack is a pretty fun thing.
They're going to be high up there. They might not be as special. Also, you see a sack. I don't want to say you've seen them all, but there are only so many ways to create a sack differently.
Yeah,
but Vaughn was sacks, built different. But
sacks come with sack dances.
Yeah, okay, fair.
Well, and it was just, I mean, it was just the way that there would be time where, you know, a ball would come off of an opposing bat, and just the way it's hit, you think, okay, that's, you know, that's down the line, that's in between second and third, You know, that's good for a base, at least maybe two. And Nolan would just make these unbelievable diving plays. And then the one to me that always, and this is a lot of, it's a lot in baseball, but there was something about the way that Nolan did it. It was like you said, it was a missile and it was right here for whoever he was throwing it to every time. It just, it feels like, or it felt like you never had to see guys really reaching for balls that Nolan were throwing. It was just the accuracy, the speed. I'm sorry. Yeah, it was electric to watch him here, and that's why, like you said, it's such a dagger to talk about it.
The number of times that guy flashed in front of a Gold Glove caliber shortstop to make a play that no other third baseman in baseball was even trying to make, because they're like, that's a Gold Glove shortstop, he's got it. And he would flash in front of that dude and be like, nah, this is mine.
Yeah.
Like, he's just, he is, what sucks is that Ryan McMahon is a really good defensive third baseman, and it feels like he's human, and Nolan is still that guy sitting on the moon.
Yeah.
Like, he just was just on a different level. And, like, Ryan McMahon is a great defensive third baseman. And there's still the gap there.
Yeah. Yeah, it's tough. We can stop talking about him because I can feel everyone getting collectively sad.
Honestly, it would have been easier to go from Nolan Arenado to like a true like butcher in the field where you're just like, this guy's a fucking bum.
Yeah, he sucks.
You know, and you could have just moved on and you're like, whatever. But instead, you have a very good third baseman and you're still just like,
yeah,
it's just not that good.
Nuggets, I think it's gonna be a little bit tougher. They don't have anybody. Dikembe Mutombo is who we all kind of talked and agreed that's probably who's number one on that list. But they just don't have. You know, even once we're gonna get to the Avs here, yeah, you maybe have a little bit of recency bias, but even throw that out. And I mean, you've got Hall of Fame defenders, numbers retired, stuff like that. And the Nuggets just don't really have much in terms of that conversation. Now, I'm sure if Adam was on our show, he'd be telling me what an idiot I am. But
I think he would say it's a team that went from ABA, high scoring, like just a different league, to Dougmo, super high scoring. Like, the Nuggets have just built most of their best eras around high scoring, high octane offenses to take advantage of the altitude, run and gun, and sacrificing defense to some extent. We're honestly lucky we even have Mutombo to talk about, or else no one would really be worthy of this conversation.
Right.
For the record,
Andy's kind of second on that list.
Two Nuggets players have won NBA's Defensive Player of the Year. Dikembe Mutombo won it. 94-95 when they made that crazy fun run, and then Marcus Camby won it in 2006-2007.
So there you go.
I forgot that. Wow.
Yeah. So there's the two guys that we just listed, and again, it's not that they aren't good players; they weren't great players. You said they're both NBA Defensive Player of the Year. I just don't know if even Dikembe Mutombo is in that conversation with some of these guys that we are talking about, in that tier, I guess I should say.
I think he's in the Hall of Fame. Like, and I think he would have been
four Defensive Player of the Year awards is like way up there. I think it's him and Ben Wallace are like the only guys in that elevated air. Maybe there's some recent guys like Rudy starting to inch up in there, but
yeah, it's just that
award means less.
He just wasn't in Denver for all of that. If you put the entire thing together, if you put the whole resume together, if you put his Denver and Atlanta 10 years, and if all of that happened in Denver, you have a great Dikembe Mutombo argument. Because that would have been all of his Defensive Player of the Year awards. He was a dominant shot blocker in an era of great shot blockers, in an era of great centers. I mean, that was Dikembe Mutombo, Hakeem Olajuwon, Shaquille O'Neal, Alonzo Mourning. I know I'm
David
forgetting.
Robinson.
David Robinson, thank you. Patrick Ewing, like a great era of centers.
Uh-huh.
And he was the best there. For my big thing is that he just wasn't in Denver that long.
Yeah.
Yep. I mean, I remember growing up, most of what I knew as a Nuggets fan for the first like 13 years of my life was my Italian father, who lived in Colorado for 10 years before we moved, telling me like, yeah, Mutombo was the best player we had and we just couldn't retain it. It was like a sadder, shorter version of what we just lamented over Nolan. Like it doesn't feel as raw 30 years later. I don't know. I can't do the math from 95, 27 years later. The peaks were never like really that high. Rookie of the year, though, he does get that one defensive player. He has one of those iconic moments where they upset the Sonics in the first round as the one seed and then almost pull it off against the Jazz, forcing seven in the very next round, which is almost forgotten. So there are Dikembe, some memorable moments.
Dikembe Mutombo laying on his back, holding the ball, celebrating when they beat Seattle is one of Denver's greatest, like most iconic sports moment of all time. And that's even with six championships considered.
Right.
Because I don't think that there's an iconic moment from the second Super Bowl, the win over the Falcons. There was a bunch of them from the first. I don't know that there's like a real like an iconic moment from the first Avs Cup run. Maybe just Uwe Krupp's cup clinching goal in overtime is kind of like that moment, right?
Yeah.
But then you get, I think, these last couple of championships. You know, this one's for John in the helicopter, but then this one's for Pat, and then you have Landy and that group, like that core group that lifted it up. And maybe it's more iconic to me than it will be in Denver because of how close I've been to the group as they developed and as they grew up. So it'll go down as more iconic to me, but the Mutombo with the basketball, it will forever be one of like the Denver sports moments in my lifetime that I think of when I think iconic Denver sports moments. That Mutombo on his back with the basketball. Like, I remember that. I'm going to remember that as much as anything anything else Nuggets related until Jokic and Murray lead them to a chip.
For sure. That's up there, man. No doubt.
I do just have to mention the one iconic moment that you left out is the Sakic passing the cup to Bork.
Oh, sorry. That was I
think it was
flew right by it because I'm like, this is like one of the top three iconic sports moments ever in my opinion. So I just like just jumped right through it. But yeah, you're totally right.
Yeah. It's a good point. There's been a lot of fun iconic moments, and I agree with you, AJ, on this year's Avs team. I thought there was a bunch of iconic moments. If you guys haven't already heard, another iconic moment is this entire summer because it's Smooth Sack Summer. We talked about it last week. I know AJ's just been prepping for it for the last 7 days leading up to this show.
People be holding AJ's sack up like Mutombo, just like their eyes. Yeah, just that's how iconic it is.
When you're playing in the summer sun, make sure you are skated from the pubes to the bum. That's right. This is the summer to keep your balls cool while still looking hot with Manscaped. The leader in below the belt grooming is making sure we all have a ball, Hong Kong, this summer by giving our pants partners everything they need to stay fresh.
Let's say from the what? From the pubes to the...
to the bum. Pubes to the bum, yeah.
So you know, just launch pad to trash hole. Got it.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Yeah, Satan's driveway, whatever you want to call it. dive head first into Smooth Sack Summer by going to manscaped.com for 20% off plus free shipping when you use our code DNVR. The Manscaped Performance Package 4.0 has everything you need to prepare that summer bod. Inside the package, you'll find the Lawnmower 4.0 trimmer, weed whacker, ear and nose trimmer, crop preserver, ball deodorant, crop reviver toner, performance boxer briefs, and a travel bag to hold all of it. Their Lawnmower 4.0 trimmer features a cutting-edge ceramic blade to reduce grooming accidents, which everyone's been there, thank goodness. Thanks to their advanced skin-safe technology, Lawnmower 4.0 has a 7,000 RPM motor, multifunction on-off switch, and it gives you the ability to use their LED light on there, so you no longer have to guess. It'll always be precision, a precision shave. And by the way, if I haven't mentioned yet, it's waterproof. In the shower, at the lake, or like AJ and I were talking about last week, if you're just out at the beach with your boys, you're needing to trim it up, yes, you can take it there too.
That's what you brought the boys for, is to help, obviously.
Yeah. Why else would you
teamwork have makes the dream work.
Right. Why else would you have a waterproof Lawnmower 4.0 trimmer if you weren't bringing the boys to the beach to help you out?
I mean, you got to do that thing underwater. Otherwise.
Yeah. Otherwise, you're getting hair all over yourself. Now it's all over the beach towel. It's
the kids at the other end of the beach are not going to appreciate that.
They don't want to see that. Yeah. You're not trying to get in trouble out there. Thank God Manscaped has you covered. Get 20% off and free shipping with that code DNVR at manscaped.com. Again, 20% off your order plus free shipping when you use the code DNVR at manscaped.com. It's smooth sack summer, boys. Get on board or get left behind. We're on board. We're not getting left behind. So, you know, get on board with us. Also brought to you guys by our good friends over at DraftKings. You can get it on the hottest.
New read. New read alert. No, I went.
Okay.
I had a parlay proposition, you guys, from DraftKings. So you tell me when I can do that.
Okay, yeah, we'll do this, and then I'm going right to you.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, get in on all the hottest sports action this summer. Get your shot at cold hard cash with DraftKings Sportsbook. Bet on all your favorite sports teams all summer long and gear up for football season, which, as we just said, preseason kicks off this weekend. Right now, new customers can get a risk-free bet up to $1,000. Just make sure your first bet up to $1,000. Just make your first bet, up to $1,000. And if it doesn't hit, you will get another shot at a big win. Plus, with same game parlays, spreads, money lines, over unders, props, all your betting, your options are endless. You can do anything on DraftKings. Best of all, DraftKings is safe, secure, and reliable. You can deposit and withdraw your cash whenever you want. I say it every time I do this read. That is my favorite part. There's a few apps out there that make you get to a minimum dollar amount. All kinds of stuff. DraftKings, you can take your money whenever you want. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app. Use code DNVR. Make your first deposit and get a risk-free bet up to $1,000. Again, that is code DNVR only at DraftKings Sportsbook. Must be 21 or older. Colorado only, new customers only. Minimum $5 deposit, risk-free bet paid out in the form of a non-withdrawable free bet token. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. And of course, if you have a gambling problem, you're here in Colorado, call 1-800-522-4700. Dre, what's your parlay?
Yeah, DraftKings has a pre-built parlay for you. Avs to win the West, which is just plus 170 right now. Like, it's almost even money. It's disgusting. Parlayed with the Rangers to win the East. All of a sudden, you add that one leg to the parlay. It goes from plus 170 to plus 2870. Is that enough value to be added on? AJ, you're making faces already. You hate that Rangers pick. My case would be Tampa can't go 4-for-4, and they're the one team that could have a hot goalie that, like, stands a chance.
Goalie's great equalizer. Yeah.
Yeah, Igor Shesterkin's a bum. He's going to fall apart.
Let's go. Okay, we're out then.
I've got the Rangers missing the postseason.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow, I almost just pivoted this into a full DNVR Av show. I was like, all right, to hell with the rest of this. We're talking about that. Great topic for now. I know what Monday's show is. Way too early predictions. Wow.
Plus 230 to miss the playoffs. Nice juice.
I was gonna pump your tires on that one, Dre. If there's anyone, like, I'm not betting against Andre Vasilevsky or Igor Shesterkin right now, but AJ coming in with the hammer.
I love it. You've given me much to think about, AJ.
Well, another... I mean, look, after I manscaped, I got to use the hammer on something.
it's too smooth. It's too smooth. I can't just let it sit there going unused.
What I'm saying, man, I just look down and it's just sitting there. Please do something.
I'll make you sweat here.
So I dropped it.
Wow, you totally made my loser. Made me lose my train of thought on that one.
Greatest defenders in Avs history?
Yes. Well, also, I was going to say, I don't normally pick against Andre Vasilevsky, but I did about 6 weeks ago, and it paid off. A lot of it was led by the next guy we're going to talk about here. You mentioned recency bias, and that's absolutely a factor, especially when you run down some of the defenders that the Avs have had wear their uniform before. But we just talked actually a little bit about Cale Makar on the Avs show, just a little. And one of the things that we kept bringing up, or that came up when we were talking about it, is this is a guy that's potentially, like, he has the potential to be change the way we view the position, change the way the league looks at defenders. Very, very early in his career, he's on a track. He's 23, 24 years old. He's got a long way to go. He is on the track to be in the conversation for the greatest defenseman of all time. Having said all of that, AJ, gonna start with you. Is that enough to, on a list right now, put him ahead of the likes of, you know, without going too far down the list, because we're going to get into some of these honorable mentions here, but let's just use Rob Blake, because that is someone that maybe we go to a lot. Has Cale Makar done enough to put himself ahead of Rob Blake in terms of Denver sports?
I think so. I think when you're – it's realized potential. Like, we talk about, oh, he could be this, he could be that. Look what he's done. 3 years in the NHL. Okay, 3 years in the NHL. He's won a Calder. He's finished second in the Norris. He won the Norris. He won a Conn Smythe. He won a Stanley Cup.
No, that's some TD shit. He's like, that's one of the great three-year stretches.
Period. And to be honest with you, this, you say that, you're not incorrect, but we don't know what comes next for him. Yeah. This last year could be the first year of the truly great three-year stretch where he wins three Norris trophies and another Conn Smythe and another cup. Or, you know, we don't know. Maybe he completely falls apart and it turns out we've all been wrong and he's a total bum. But what he's done so far, yeah, I would say that I would already take his accomplishments, his level of play, his impact on the game. I would take it over all those other guys. I mean, Rob Blake still needed, Rob Blake and Ray Bourque were great. Adam Foote was great. Eric Johnson was pretty good. These guys have all – there have been some greats in Avalanche history, but none of them reached the highs in an Avalanche sweater. Because if you're talking about beyond that, obviously Blake and especially Bourque. Bourque's the career – I think Bourque is the kind of career that Cale Makar is chasing. Extremely prolific offensively. A ton of games played. A bunch of Norris. A wall-to-wall career of accomplishment for Ray Bourque. That's the career that Cale Makar is chasing, but that's the career he has started in Colorado, where he has won those things already. And he's 23 years old, so we're just getting started.
So I was just about to say, as you're running down that, and you guys will have to help me fill in the blanks here. At 23, is he the most decorated Denver athlete on this list? Or does Vaughn maybe have him beat out by like a an individual award here and there.
No, I mean, like a
rookie of the year, a top defenseman, playoff MVP, and a championship in his first 4 years in the league. Like, I don't know if he may already be the most decorated player we have on this list in an Avs uniform.
At 23, yes.
yeah, oh, for sure. Like
Vaughn at best had two of the four you just listed off at 23.
Yeah, obviously, so
he entered the league basically at 23. So it's not saying
right. Vaughn. Hold on, I'm counting.
But I mean, you just listed Vaughn's entire career achievement in his whole tenure at Denver, and Kale achieved that at 23. That's not even getting into the, you know, the college stuff, which is even more insane.
Right, right. Vaughn, yeah.
So Vaughn has a defensive rookie of the year and 8 Pro Bowls, and he's on the postseason All-Pro team, first or second team, 6 times.
Mm-hmm. First team, yeah. Just 3 times. And then he has the Super Bowl MVP.
And a Super Bowl MVP.
But, I mean, again, that's 8 years to achieve what Kale did in 3.
Right. Well, and the part that I – one of my, like, favorite, like, trick questions, this was Kale McCarr's first full season. Like, we forget that a lot because he had the – he came in the playoffs, COVID-shortened year. This was his first 82-game season. And, I mean, he's set all kinds of records for point production, you know, individual seasons. He's climbing. He's, like, rapidly ascending the ranks for goals, assists, and points, you know, Avalanche franchise history as a defenseman. He really is. I think AJ maybe put it best. We have to see what comes next because these first three years, 3 point, like, two, if you count the playoff run. I mean, maybe the best 3 years for an individual's, yeah, like you said, since Terrell Davis for a Denver athlete.
Yeah, when Terrell Davis was, he finished top 3 in MVP voting for 2 years, won the MVP, had a 2,000-yard season, was the offensive player of the year, and then also won a Super Bowl MVP in that time.
With a Super Bowl record that has yet to be beaten while dealing with a migraine headache that kept him out for a quarter and a half.
Yeah, and he accomplished all that by the time he was 26. Yeah. So pretty – and but difference is that he started his career at 23.
Yeah, right.
Right. So, I mean
– wow.
Just based on what you just listed, I mean, there's a lot of people that are already starting to talk about Kale McCarr potentially – could potentially put himself in the conversation for MVP next year for a Hart Trophy. I think if he does that, then I mean, like, Kale McCarr kind of puts himself into a different tier of Denver athlete at that point, where you're not just talking about greatest defenders. He kind of like ascends that list at that point. But you know, it is hard to rank him right now because again, we try not to look too much at the longevity, but. Go back to what started this conversation in Champ Bailey, and it's like, it's been unbelievable what McCarr's done, but you have a hard time putting him ahead of someone who's in, obviously different sports, but in the Hall of Fame. Yeah. Champ Bailey's already in the Pro Football Hall of Fame, so it's hard to sit here and say this player who is, like we just said, accomplished an unbelievable amount in his first 3 seasons. It's mentally hard to get yourself there in terms of this person surpasses Hall of Fame level players this early.
My only pushback on Kale's nomination as like just unanimous top Avs defender of all time already is how much in this conversation of top defender is his offensive game actually putting him over the top? Because thus far, we haven't really had to get into it. We never even had to mention any Nolan Arenado slash lines. No one brought up Mutombo's rebounding numbers or anything he did offensively, because that's just going to hurt his case. While we framed the Vaughn versus Champ, no one was talking about translating defense to offense, who had more pick sixes or sack recoveries for touchdowns, shit like that.
That's a great point.
But, I mean, Kale wasn't even playing on the PK for most of these. That's a very recent development.
Up until part of the league this year.
Right.
Yeah, up until they made a Stanley Cup run.
Right.
And he became part of a unit that locked it the fuck down and stopped giving
controls. Right. I mean, that's the thing. The kid's just a freak, so everything's like outlandish. But could you make a case that at least at this point in their careers, the body of work from an Adam Foote in his own blue line is more impressive, or Rob Blake, or Ray Bourque, than Kale, who really is an offensive defenseman? I mean, that is what he brings to the table. That's the appeal. Yeah. That's the like Bobby Orr of the 2000s that he brings to the table.
So I think, and for me, and AJ, I'll be curious to hear what you think on this. For me, a lot of what you're talking about is what makes Cale Makar special and stand out. Is he's, I mean, prolific offensive producer from the back end already at this point in his career. And typically in hockey, in the NHL, with the exception, you know, since Bobby Orr, that has usually come with the trade-off of, yes, but they aren't great in their own end. They aren't great killers, you know, penalty killers. That's where Cale Makar, even amongst just hockey circles, has started to separate himself, is his defensive impact. While it maybe isn't quite as great as his offensive,
right?
His ability.
So that's not
saying. Right. Right. He is kind of an anomaly in terms of he's an elite high-end defenseman in the same way that he's an elite high-end point producer from the back end. Again, maybe they aren't exactly equal to each other, but that's part of what makes him a bit of a unicorn here through these first 3 years, is he's not a liability in the back end.
I will confidently say this and personally invite anybody to meet me in Temecula if they want to agree. But if Cale Makar, if you don't consider Cale Makar's offensive ability for one single second, he is still a top 10 defenseman in the NHL, and he's on every single top pairing in the league. If he stopped skating at center ice on every single shift after his team broke the puck out, and it was just defense, it was just defense for him, he would still be a top pairing defenseman in the NHL and on every single team, all 32 teams.
Yeah.
So the offense, I think, is what puts him over the top in this conversation, is what drives a lot of it. But the idea that Cale Makar is not also an elite defender is only pushed by people who don't know what they're talking about. That isn't to say he's a finished product and that he doesn't have room for improvement. He does. There are things that I would like for him to get better. We were robbed of an iconic Nathan MacKinnon moment against the St. Louis Blues because Cale Makar was too weak defending front of the net and in the dying moments of the game. A goofy-ass bounce also helped, but he loses his man. He lost his man on a number of occasions in front of the net during their postseason run. It's not that he's perfect. No defender is, though. Right, especially when you're talking about defense, which is all about the prevention of things happening to you. Things are going to happen to you eventually. It's an inevitability. And with Makar, it's just that he does such an exceptional job of limiting it and then combining it with his ability to drive it the other direction. Yeah. When you look at those two things, you consider the competition that he's playing against, because it's not like they're sneaking him out there against fourth lines and being like, my evil plan.
Yeah.
They're throwing him out there against the Connor McDavids of the world, and they're saying, go break even. Go break even with Connor freaking McDavid. Okay. And he holds up his end of the deal consistently. He holds up his end of the deal. That's who he is. He's that guy.
The other part of it too, because I agree with you in terms of, like, you take away the scoring and he's still so unbelievably high end. The skating too. I mean, he's a his ability to skate, his ability to move. In my opinion, Connor McDavid's the only player that kind of floats the way that he does. And it just, it you go back to the Rob Blake, Ray Bourque, Adam Foote era. being swift-footed was not a defenseman's forte. They were not skaters.
Oh, look at the smooth skating offensive defenseman that was on the 0-1 defense. Everybody hated Martin Skula.
Yeah.
Hated him.
Yeah.
That guy ended up having a great career. A good career.
Yeah, yeah. Very solid. Lost Dre here. He was getting pretty pixely, froze up a bit.
Hammer had to go to work.
Yeah, I was going to say, and then his Manscaped package showed up, so he had to bail. Mm-hmm. I'm assuming he'll be jumping back in here at some point.
I mean, we ought to be pretty close to being wrapped up on this.
So what I was actually going to do is I was going to have everyone go through and give their one real honorable mention that, man, this is a guy who I think could crack the top five. We have such good conversation with this stuff when you, me, and Dre get together that we want to be able to list off a couple guys from CU, CSU, stuff like that. But yeah, we just kind of ran out of time. Do you have anyone, AJ? And if Dre can't jump back on, then you and I will go and we'll get out of here. But do you have anyone that you say, man, I really do think could be on this list, should be on this list?
Yeah, I think it's especially true if he signs a second contract in Colorado and things keep going how they have. But I think Devon Taves has the chance to put himself in this conversation because he's been nothing but special since his arrival in Denver. But if it ends up just being 4 years, it's tough to again, Mutombo was here for five. So it's just a tough go when you're not here for very long. So I would say, look, Randy Gratishar probably should be in the Hall of Fame. The hard part here is I never watched that dude play. It's before I was born. I don't have any personal stake in this one. All I know is what all the old head tell me, which is that Randy Gratishar was absolutely devastating. I believe them. So if I'd had more of a personal experience there, I might stand harder for Gratishar, but he absolutely deserves mention. And then the one guy that I'm pretty serious about giving a shout out to at this point, dude, Steve Atwater was an absolute maniac.
That was the first name that you threw out when we were putting together the list.
My entire childhood was Steve Atwater just murdering dudes. And if it wasn't for Terrell Davis, I've always maintained Terrell Davis, Super Bowl MVP against the Packers. If Steve Atwater does not drop the interception that he drops, you could have absolutely made an ironclad case for Steve Atwater that day. Because if you go back and you rewatch Packers Broncos Super Bowl 32, Steve Atwater decimates that offense. He is all over the field. He is in Brett Favre's kitchen the whole game. He wreaks absolute havoc in that game. And his finishing touch is knocking three guys out on the last drive. One hit. Himself, his teammate, and Robert Brooks.
So he's
in the Hall of Fame too. So another guy pretty freaking good.
For all those reasons you just listed for Atwater, a lot of them are my same reasons for Adam Foote is my honorable mention. And I think I talked about it on the Av show a couple weeks ago. My favorite thing about, and that's what we're talking about here, my favorite thing about watching old Adam Foote highlights is it's just great defensive stop after great defensive stop, stick work, physicality, the play in front of the net, you know, he very rarely, we were just talking about Cale Makar getting outworked in front of the net. He never said that about Adam Foote. And I grew up, you know, I grew up a defenseman, you know, in that era of when those guys were pros. And I just remember watching so much of Adam Foote and just having such an appreciation for exactly what you said, just the stuff that he did, that it was so easy to keep an eye on Peter Forsberg and Joe Sakic and Milan Hayduk and Patrick Waugh, and that the stuff that Adam Foote did, he was truly one of those like unsung heroes that without Adam Foote, so much of the great stuff at the other end never happens, because if Adam Foote doesn't make that play 45 seconds earlier or whatever, and you know,
there aren't a lot of guys in pro sports history. There are some, but not a ton, who have their jerseys retired by an organization and are not in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah. Yeah. And that, I think, tells you, and I think it is disappointing, it kind of tells you just how valuable he was to this franchise, mm-hmm. in that heyday. And I think he was one of those guys that when they announced they were retiring his number, there were some people like, oh, well, why? But anybody that really watched that early, that first era of Avalanche hockey, everyone understood. Like, it made sense.
The 2001 Stanley Cup run, look, go back and watch that series against the St. Louis Blues. And
yeah,
their best offensive player was Keith Tkachuk. And you know what he did in that series with Adam Foote going one-on-one against him all series long? And do dick.
Whole bunch of nothing. But yeah, so like you said, it's one of those things for all your reasons with Atwater, I do just have like the Adam Foote just like speaks to me. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Rob Ray, Trey Bork, all those guys, you know, they're all good, but Adam Foote's the one guy I wanted to make sure we got on there. Well, yeah, so we lost Dre, so we are going to go ahead and get out of here. AJ and I have been potting for like 4.5 straight hours, so I think we're good. We'll be back at it on TDSP next week. We're going through the off season here. We're getting ready to get, obviously football starts this weekend. So we'll have some more Broncos centric shows. We're going to be talking about the Rapids. We're going to be talking about CU, CSU as their football seasons get going. So we're coming out of this dark period. There's like 3 weeks here for pro sports where all you have is, the MLB, which is great, but when you're coming off of NHL playoffs, NBA playoffs, it can be kind of a letdown. So we're coming out of it. Keep it tuned into TDSP. AJ and I will be on the DNVR Avalanche podcast tomorrow, doing a Q&A show. So if you're listening to this today, which is Wednesday, get your questions in for tomorrow's DNVR Avalanche show on Thursday. Andre, AJ, I'm Jesse. This is the Denver Sports Podcast. We'll talk to you guys all next time.